Good morning to each one of you here this morning. This is definitely a different experience here for me, and I appreciate each one of your prayers and encouragement that you've shared so far with me, and I appreciate each one of your prayers. Jason's devotional this morning on fear was something that I appreciated very much. Fear is something that we all experience sometimes in various degrees. And sometimes it's fear, when we're little, it's fear of the dark. I have experienced that myself, and I have a young son that experiences fear of the dark sometimes. He doesn't like to put his bike away after dark if he forgets. And then now, you know, I'm standing up front and looking at all of you, and I know that one-on-one you're not scary, but for some reason it's something that I struggle with a little bit the first time. And but I appreciated Jason's the promises that he had brought out. Fear is with God we can experience power. I'd like to invite your attention, if you would, invite you to open your Bibles to John chapter 11, and I'd like to read that chapter here. But first of all, I've been thinking, what would life be like without people? Have you ever felt like just sometimes just sweeping everybody under the rug and standing on the rug and being the only one that you could just, you wouldn't have to worry about people anymore? What would life be like without other people? And then I thought, well, what would our lives be like without the influence of others in our lives? what would we be like if we have our character would not have any, there'd be no balancing of our character. There'd be no nobody to share encouragement with us. And any rough edges on our character would just be rough all the time, unless we woke up in the morning and decided that we wanted to, you know, cut this rough edge off. And so people, relating with people is a blessing, even though we sometimes don't appreciate everything that everybody has to say. And, you know, some relationships that we find ourselves in, they'll stretch us. Maybe we're coaching somebody that has some real needs in their life, and we don't know where to go. Well, how do we handle this? How we have to go to God's Word and to experience the learning ourselves first before we can help others. Then some relationships just wear us down, and we just say, "Oh God, why did you put me in this position? This is an awful position to be in." That's when you want to put everybody under the rug and stand on the rug. But then some relationships improve our quality of life. I remember a few years ago I was going through some difficult times in my life. I was struggling with bitterness in a real way, and it was a big thing. And I remember one evening, I'm not even sure why this brother called me, but he called me, and I don't even know why, but there was some things in my life I think he wanted to address. He did it in a very nice way, but there was some encouragement given. He really appreciated me, and I felt like he did, and he encouraged. It was in a real crucial time in my life, or critical time, that encouragement came, and the whatever else he said, I don't even remember what all he said, but I just remember after that phone call, it caused me to examine some things in my life and make some changes that were definitely necessary. And So a relationship of encouragement can be a real blessing if it's given in a time when encouragement can be a blessing. We never know at what point in somebody's life it will make a big difference. And then of course other relationships are like fire. It tries us, and it's the heat of this relationship is extremely hot, and we feel like we are not going to survive. But it sometimes those experiences tend to burn out some of the impurities in our life. Also, if there is a world without people, think how boring it would be. I mean, really, it would be, even for a long term. Maybe 3 weeks would be nice sometimes, but longer than that would be very, very nice. But we are social beings. We've been created in God's image, and God's a social being. God desires fellowship with us. That's why he created man, is to have fellowship with us. But we are created in God's image, and we desire fellowship with others. We desire fellowship with others. And there's different types of relationships. I mean, we all want friends, the desire to have friends, to be accepted, to be somebody, or to be accepted and looked up to is a desire that we all have. We all want friends. So we have friends. There's a relationship of friends. We have our family. They can be friends. Our family can be friends. But family is a unique situation. We work together closer typically with our family than we do with our outside friends. And sometimes there's character differences or personality differences that cause friction sometimes in a family. Thinking of my own family, our children, pardon me for using my own family, but that's the experience that I have here. Some of the children get along well, just naturally get along well. And some of them, it seems like they tend to, they're always at odds. They say things, do things that rub the others the wrong way. And so if they're left together by themselves, it's not long before there's a fight comes up and mom or dad has to step in and take care of it, or there might not be anybody left. But that's how it can be sometimes with we can be that way too. So we have a family relationship. That's another type of relationship. We also have a church. That's a type of family, but it's a little different because hopefully each person in the church is born again, so we have the power of the Spirit to work with to develop those relationships. We have civil relationships in our relating to our government, relating to local authorities, relating to policemen, courts, judges. Thinking of ones that we would interact on a regular basis. There's, of course, you work with the state. There's permits to buy for those that buy over with permits. There's different things, different levels of civil relationships that we work with. And then, of course, the governor, the president, the senators, all those, we don't really interact with them too much, but they are in authority over us, and we do have a relationship with them based on being a citizen of this country. And then, we have business contacts. There's relationships in our business. We have, of course, relationships there with customers. You have difficult ones sometimes. You have very nice ones sometimes. Most of the time, they're very nice. You have customers. You have vendors. As long as you pay your bill, the relationship with the vendors is usually pretty good, unless service is not good, then sometimes you have to find other vendors. You have truck drivers that come, and of course they're just there for a little bit, and as long as they're unloaded in a timely manner, they're usually happy. You have neighbors. There's neighbors that we relate with. Life is full of relationships. We relate with people all the time. And there are, there's just so many of those relationships that we need to develop. We have to watch our own life and make sure that our own life is not causing somebody to have a negative relationship with us. As far as the friend relationship, there's some verses I'd like to read. I had had you open to John chapter 11, but we might just wait on that just a little bit. On the friends, Amos chapter 3, verse 3, it says, "Can two walk together except they be agreed?" Not very long if they're not agreed. Proverbs 11:13 says, "A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter." So a talebearer, somebody that tells stories and spreads gossip about people, is definitely not on a long-term happy relationship course with their friend. But if you conceal the matter, not hiding sin, but to put people in a good light, is somebody that you want to be your friend. You don't want to, you want somebody to be your friend. The next verse was Proverbs 25, verse 19. It says, "Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a broken tooth and a foot out of joint." I've never had a broken tooth, but I have had a foot out of joint, and there isn't much that hurts worse than that. Well, I haven't experienced a whole lot, but it's enough to almost make you go crazy, because it really hurts. And confidence in an unfaithful man in the time of trouble, when you really need a friend and you trust in somebody and they break that trust, however it is, that can really hurt too. But then Proverbs 17, verse 17 says, "A friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." So a friend, a real friend, will be there all the time. And a brother is part of your family. A brother will be there when you need him, even if you've had scraps in the past. Typically, they'll be there when you need them. Then in our family, we have, you don't have to read these verses. I wrote them down here, so they, I'll just look at them here. In our family, we have Ephesians 5:25. It says, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it." In verse 33 says, "Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband." So the husband loves the wife reverences the husband. It's a mutual relationship there, and as long as it's a mutual relationship and there's love and respect on both sides, it works very well. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. Parents love this verse. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother," which is the first commandment with promise, "that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." So fathers have a responsibility to be what they need to be, not provoking children to wrath. Children, obey the parents in the Lord. That's a family. Those are just a few verses there that give some direction on family relationships. For the church relationships, it says, "Let brotherly love continue." That's Hebrews 13:1. And brotherly love is a big subject in itself. And this is not an exhaustive thing, a message. This is just a message for us to think and hopefully to encourage certain areas of our life. 1 John 2, verse 10 says, "He that loveth his brother abideth in the light. There is none occasion of stumbling in him. But he that hateth his brother is in darkness and walketh in darkness and knoweth not whither he goeth, because the darkness hath blinded his eyes." That darkness hath blinded his eyes. If we have love, we abide in the light. If we don't have light, love, we abide in the darkness. And walking in darkness is unhandy, especially at night. If I go out and shut my chickens up, there's a hole on the way out there that if I don't know, if it's pitch dark and I don't take a light with me, I fall in this hole sometimes and it's aggravating. For civil relationships, it says, Romans 13, 1, I'll just read verses 1 through 7. It says, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. Whosoever, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good. Thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is a minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore you must needs be subject not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. So don't be subject to them just because they will get angry and come down on you with force, but do it because you believe it's the right thing to do. For this cause pay tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor. And in business, there is a couple verses there. In 1 Corinthians 4:2, this is thinking, 1 Corinthians 4:2, it says, moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. And back in the Old Testament, Joash was the king there. The temple needed to be rebuilt, and he was collecting money. They put a box by the altar, and they put the money in it. But in 1 Kings 12, verse 15, after they had got the money out, they paid it out to the workmen. It says, they reckoned not with the men into whose hand they delivered the money to be bestowed on workmen, for they dealt faithfully. So the men, they didn't have an overseer that came along and checked up on everybody to make sure that money was being spent right. They just did it because the men were faithful. Okay, that was a few thoughts there. I'd like to go to John chapter 11, and we'll read that here. This is a story. Jesus, there was a certain family, a certain family that Jesus seemed to have a special relationship with. Lazarus, Mary, and Martha, this is what the account is here. Jesus seemed to have a special relationship with them. Prior to that, in Luke, I don't know if it's prior to this, but it seems like it. In Luke chapter 10, verse 38, Martha had invited Jesus into her house, and they had Jesus had come, and Martha was busy serving everybody. And Mary wasn't helping. Mary just sat at Jesus' feet and was listening to what Jesus had to say. Martha was unhappy with this and had asked Jesus to make her sister help her. But Jesus had told her that Mary had chosen the good part. Mary was interested in learning and basically told Martha not to worry about it. But Jesus had a special relationship with them. And let's read John 11, verse 1. It says, now a certain man was sick, named Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sister sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. When he had heard therefore that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. So let's, in these verses here, Jesus had he loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. So he had a friendly relationship with them. He was a friend. More than just, it almost seemed like the relationship was more than just the same as what he had with the ones that he healed on a day-by-day basis. Or I say on a daily basis, the ones that he interacted with on a daily basis. So they sent for him, and when he had heard, therefore, he waited 2 days before he went. It says, then after that saith he to his disciples, let us go into Judea again. His disciples said to him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and goest thou thither again? Well, there's another relationship Jesus had. He had an adversarial relationship with the Pharisees. The Pharisees had an adversarial relationship with him, I should say. So they sought to kill him, and the disciples are wondering if they should go back there. Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. These things said he, and after that he saith unto them, our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep. Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. Howbeit Jesus spake of his death, but they thought that he had spoken of taking rest and sleep. Then said Jesus unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. Then said Thomas, which is called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him. Because they thought the Jews were going to kill them, I believe. Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. Now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off, and many of the Jews came to Mary and Martha to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she had heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it to thee. God will give it thee. Jesus saith unto her, thy brother shall rise again. Martha saith unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this? She saith unto him, yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. When she had so said, she went her way and called Mary her sister secretly, saying, the Master is come and calleth for thee. As soon as she heard that, she rose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. The Jews then, which were with her in the house and comforted her, when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, she goeth unto the grave to weep there. Then, when Mary was come where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit, and was troubled, and said, where have ye laid him? They said unto him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Then said the Jews, behold how he loved him. And some of them said, could not this man which opened the eyes of the blind have caused that even this man should not have died? Jesus therefore again groaning in himself cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, take ye away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days. Jesus saith unto her, said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldst see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me, and I knew that thou hearest me always, but because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he thus had spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. Jesus saith unto them, loose him and let him go. In verse 33, Jesus came to the grave with them. They were weeping. There was a mournful time in their lives. It was very sad, which funerals most of the time are sad occasions. But they were weeping, and Jesus, he had this a friend Jesus was a friend to this family. And Jesus had compassion on them. He felt with them. He groaned in the spirit and was troubled. He empathized with them, and he felt their grief. And he cried with them. Those words, Jesus wept, it simply means Jesus cried. I mean, he cried with them. He felt their grief. And the Jews that were looking on said, "Behold how he loved him." Jesus was a true friend to Mary and Martha and Lazarus. And he felt their grief with them. But Jesus also had a relationship with his Father. And I believe Mary and Martha and Lazarus knew this. They knew that he had a special relationship with his Father. They believed in him as the Messiah, or as Jesus, the Son of God. So Jesus turned to his Father in this time of grief. He felt this grief with the family. He turned to his Father and used this opportunity to show others his relationship with his Father. And because of that, many of them believed. It says there that the Jews had wanted to kill Lazarus also later on. They wanted to kill Lazarus also because this experience had caused many to believe on Jesus. But it was a powerful testimony of Jesus' compassion with his fellow man, with his family, and also showing his relationship with his Father. Also, I was going to mention also, but back in verse 14, Jesus was interested in the future faith or the growing faith of his disciples. And that was one reason why he waited 2 days to go. He wanted it to be an exercise of faith on his disciples that they would believe. Okay, so Jesus, Lazarus was raised from the dead. Lazarus came out. They loosed him and let him go. It caused many to believe on him. But then the next chapter in John 12, verse 1, and I'm not a Bible scholar, really, so I don't know if this happened after. Yeah, it did. It did. It happened afterwards. But it says... of course it did. John 12, verse 1 says, "Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then saith one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, Why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief, and had the bag, and bare what was put therein. Then said Jesus, Let her alone, against the day of my burying hath she kept this. For the poor always ye have with you, but me you have not always. Much people of the Jews therefore knew that he was there, and they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death, because that by reason of him many of the Jews went away and believed on Jesus." So Jesus had true friends in Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. They reciprocated some of this this friendship. Mary... I don't know how much Mary paid for this ointment, but it was very costly. Judas thought she could have sold it for 300 pence, which I understand in that day, 1 pence was 1 day's wages. And 300 pence was almost a whole year's wages. So I don't know if you all would be generous enough to take a whole year's wages and buy a bottle of perfume and go dump it on somebody that you love, on your good friend. But that's what Mary did. She had given the very best that she could because she loved Jesus. So that friendship, it went both ways. That went both ways. Now, I'd like to look at some things. Let's see here. What are some disorders that can disrupt some of our relationships sometimes? We have friends. You know, we want to be with them. But what are some things that disrupt that? And I had to think, if you would, turn in your Bibles to Galatians chapter 5, and we'll start in verse 19. I'll just read 19 through 21 here. It says in Galatians 5, verse 19, it says, "Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness." So adultery, fornication, uncleanness, and lasciviousness. Those are great relationship killers. Idolatry. Adultery, fornication, uncleanness, and lasciviousness would be more on a husband and wife relationship. That's a relationship killer right there. And idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath. Well, let's see. Idolatry and witchcraft would be relationship killers between us and God. God cannot tolerate another that takes his glory. Hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like would be killers that would kill relationship among just about anybody. Murder, obviously, is hard to love somebody if you've killed them or their family. But hatred is, in 1 John, is classed in the same thing as murder. Variance, wrath, and strife, those are seditions. Those are things that can happen in a brotherhood relationship. Envyings. Those things are works of the flesh. That is primarily found you expect to find those things in somebody that is not walking in the Spirit. Somebody that is not born again would have those characteristics in their life. I'm not saying that they can't have any friends, but those characteristics are going to be modeled in their life. And as I have also told you in time past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. Okay, so what are some things that strengthen our relationships then? So let's go on down to verse 22, the next verse, and it does a complete flip. Those that walk in the Spirit have the fruit of the Spirit. It says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace. Those are relationship builders. Those love and joy and peace, you want to have somebody like that for your friend, and others want to have somebody like that for their friend. Long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance, or self-control. Against such there is no law, and they that are Christ's have crucified the flesh, all the previous bad relationship killers. Have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let's also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another and envying one another. As we walk in the Spirit and we cultivate the fruits of the Spirit, in our relationships with other people, as we apply those things to our life, our relationships should be healthy if we apply all the fruits of the Spirit. Now, it's a daily struggle. to take the works of the flesh and kill them. It is. It's a daily struggle. We have to work on it every day. But with God's help and the work of His Spirit in our lives, we can grow in that fruit. That fruit can ripen on our... We can be a branch that fruit can grow on if we're willing to be attached to the vine, which is Jesus. In closing here, I want in Hebrews 11, it talks about, I'll just turn to Hebrews 11, and we'll start reading in verse 32 here. There's a verse I'd like to pick out of this here. But in closing, in thinking of this, it says, how much do we value our relationship with others? How much do we value others' relationship with us? And we naturally will just gravitate toward those with whom we have a kindred spirit with. And it's easy for us to look at how will others benefit us? How will they benefit me? What do I have in common with this person? What do I have in common with that person? What can I get out of this relationship? But as a spirit-filled Christian, should we be concerned so much about what I can get out of it, or what should we be more concerned with? Having the fruit grow on our branches, and some of the other relationship parts will take care of itself if we can make us ourselves what we should be through with God's help. Okay, Hebrews 11:32, it says, what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and of Samson, of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and dens and caves of the earth. They endured tremendous hardship, and they had faith. They believed God, and out of weakness, when life was totally, there was no way out, God came to their rescue, and God working through them made them strong. It says, these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. And verse 40 is what I'd like to highlight. It says, God, having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. Have you ever thought of that? All these giants in the Old Testament, without us, I mean, that they, in the history, we can learn from them, but in the New Testament, which we're living in, it takes all of us working together to fulfill God's plan. God, having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. And then Hebrews 12:1-3, it says, wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. And then verse 3 is what I'd like to end on. It says, for consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself. Let's use Jesus as an example. Lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Let's bow our heads for prayer.